The analogy I use is this. Imagine if you handed an index card to every kid in your program before they were going to play in a national championship or a state championship game. Would everyone in the organization, coach, player, manager, write down, these are the core principles of our program? If they wouldn't, then you don't even have people on the same page, let alone then taking the next step of intentionally living those on a daily basis. It's keeping the process over the outcome and letting go of the outcome because you can't control it. And when you let go of the outcome, you dramatically increase your chances of getting it.
Hey, I think we got a really special podcast lined up for you here. It's with Jeremy Schiedinger of the American Baseball Coaches Association, the ABCA. It's called Calls from the Clubhouse. And I happen to be a featured guest on his podcast, and I think you're really going to like this as we dive into the mental game of baseball and how you really give yourself that best chance for success. And as you're listening to this podcast, make sure you take notes, because on Monday, April 3rd, we're going to be having a live Twitter chat where I'm going to answer all of your questions about the mental game of baseball. So enjoy this podcast, and we'll see you together on April 3rd.
So with today's episode, it's a treat for all of us who are personal growth junkies, guys who want more out of ourselves, they want to become more efficient, more productive, and gain that edge on the field, but also in life. And you know what? We want that for our players too. The kids we coach, the programs we're building, we want our players to be able to combat and battle through the failure that's in our game and never succumb to it. But where do we usually fall short? And more often than not, if you answer that question, it's between our ears, our mental game, our focus, our thoughts, which will always dictate our actions. So how do we get better at this? I mean, what are those cues? What's the plan? What's going to be your process to overcoming that? So to help us unpack mental game, we locked down Brian Kane, the creator of Peak Performance, who's worked with countless successful high school and college programs around the country, MLB players, NFL teams, UFC athletes. And Kaner's dedicated his career to unlocking the secrets for us to become more aware of our thoughts, how to focus more clearly on what we can control, and how we can apply mental strength on the field. So we start this episode off getting to know Brian. We chronicle his beginnings with mental training, his time with the godfather himself, Ken Revizza, and the backstory to shaping Kaner's perspective on the mental game throughout his entire career. So for our coaches, we dive into several systems and coaching cues that you can apply directly after the show to yourself, your players, your teams, that will help them take more control of their mental approach to the game, change their routines, and sharpen their focus. Brian also opens up his 12 pillars of peak performance, which takes us inside the locker room with some of the most accomplished coaches and programs he's worked with, talks about their path towards mastering the mental game of baseball. Guys, this is an awesome episode, tremendous guest, guys, packed with high energy, and we're fired up to bring this one to you. So again, get your pen and paper out. Make sure you're ready to take plenty of notes. There are going to be multiple nuggets of quality information you do not want to miss. Make sure you bring this stuff right back to your team and work to master the mental game of baseball. We're excited to welcome in Brian Kane to our show, and this great episode is coming at you right now. Coaches, before we get rolling into this interview, I'm going to make a little bit of time here for you to go do a volume check on your phone, your computer, and your car. And I want to do a reference here, a cult classic, Spinal Tap. I want you to see if your speakers can go to 11, because that's where we're going with it today. There's no doubt about it. We're going to hit it. I'm sitting down with Mr. Peak Performer himself, one of the true leaders at the forefront of mental conditioning and training. We're talking with Brian Kane. Kaner, thanks for being on the call with us today.
Cheats, it's an honor, man. I can't wait. I've been chomping at the bit to do this podcast since you guys started with Calls from the Clubhouse. I'm fired up and ready to go.
Awesome. I'm hoping to kind of meet your energy and ride high. So this is really interesting how this has all come together, because we've got a ton of mutual friends, Alan Jager being the most prominent one that really started this ball in motion. And we miss each other in Anaheim this past January, but we were just reflecting a couple minutes ago. And I want to give this to our listeners. We met 10 years ago, and we were both young pups at the time, but we were at the 2007 ABCA convention in Orlando, and you had a breakout session in the hotel there, and that was my intro to you. That was the first time I had somebody, Kaner, that was talking about mental game. I was buying into it. It made sense. It seemed clear to me.
But that's pretty much about the time, you know, you're a couple years into really getting your ball rolling, correct?
Yeah, it was just, I remember, you know, my life goes in school years, and I remember, you know, take it back, kind of it all starts, right? When I start working the clock backwards, it really goes all the way back to, you know, the June of 2003, where I had the privilege of being in Omaha as a grad student assistant with Cal State Fullerton, and I'm just sitting there on the curb outside of Rosenblatt Stadium after we got beat by Stanford 2 days in a row, just crying harder than I've ever cried in my life, because I'm like, oh my God, my career as a Titan is over. I'm going to go teach high school in Vermont now. Like, I'm out of college baseball, and this has been an unbelievable ride, you know. And then I had no idea how my life or path would go. But I went 1 year of being a high school teacher in 2003 and four, became a high school athletic director 2004 and five, started up really with Dave Serrano when he took over at Irvine in 2005 after Fullerton won it in 2004. And I think it was 2006 in Orlando where we hooked up, just doing a little side sesh.
Yep. That's it. Oh, that's great. And again, that was one of the first times that somebody truly listened, maybe as a young coach 2 years in, and was listening to somebody talk mental game. And again, it made sense. And I've followed obviously everything that you've done ever since. And it's impressive, man. You're everywhere. You are one of the busiest dudes in America. I cannot thank you enough for taking some time to sit down with us. But what's great about it, man, you've written numerous books, constructed multiple training programs, worked with athletes and teams across every front, guys, high school, college, MLB, NFL, PGA, UFC, man, you're everywhere. But for this talk, and we were talking, we want to keep this old school, and I want to get back and really let our coaches get to know who Brian Kane is, because we see you on stage. You've spoken at ABCA several times, and I mean, it's electric. The room is absolutely has a pulse. But let's get back to, more importantly, like your growth professionally and personally in this realm. So we're going to start right here, Kaner. I want you to bring it back to where it all began there in Fullerton, California. And I want you to talk about the decision that you made to go to Cal State Fullerton and the opportunity to work with a guy that everyone knows, Ken Revisa. And how did that time in your life truly shape your perspective on mental training for athletes that propelled you moving forward?
Well, Sheets, it kind of starts a little bit before then, actually. It probably goes all the way back to 1997. In the fall, when I enroll at the University of Vermont as a freshman on a big time baseball scholarship, that, you know, Bill Currier, the head coach there, they didn't have big scholarships. So he made a huge investment in me to come there to be a contributor to that program. And I still have a pit in my stomach about how I did not perform for him and how I did not perform for the program. I was the worst, most overpaid college baseball pitcher in the history of college baseball. And I'll tell you, it was not because of work ethic. It was not because of desire. It was simply because I focused on the wrong things. And I went through, you know, my first year of college baseball. I mean, I'm 21-2 at a small high school in Massachusetts as a high school baseball pitcher, which, you know, at a small town in Massachusetts, you think you're like the best thing in the world, but really, sure, you're like the best snowboarder. You think you're the best snowboarder in Mexico, right? I mean, there's right. Competition isn't what you think it is. So, but you don't know that. You don't know that when you're coming out. So I go to college. I'm playing against players that are as good or better than me. And I can't get guys out, and it drives me nuts. And the only mechanism I have to deal with failure is to go harder, to run more. So sure, I start running long distance. I kid you not, the first day I ran 100 poles in the outfield. It took me 3.5 hours. I had to stop at a convenience store to get batteries for my Walkman, big yellow Sony sports deal. Remember those bad boys?
Oh, for sure.
Because I had run out of juice, you know? And then I just never, and my fastball went from like 88 as a sophomore in high school down to like 82 as a sophomore in college, because I was training wrong, you know? So, and I just got into a vicious cycle of negative thoughts and negative actions and negative performance. And it's all because I'm not working harder, because that's the only thing that I knew. I didn't understand there was a mental game and work smarter. So I end up, you know, thinking I have this idea of I'm going to hook up with, you know, this physical therapist that's a student next to me, and I'm going to have her stretch out my arm so I have more external rotation and internal rotation so I can throw harder, because my arm will go through a greater range of motion at a faster speed. I mean, I wanted to be Tom House, man. I was making this stuff up. And next thing you know, I'm having a shoulder surgery, and my career basically is over. I'm a junior in college, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. At the time, it was the worst thing, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it required me to stay on campus my junior year, between junior and senior year, And I remember clear as day sheets. It was July 4th. I was working as a residential advisor at the University of Vermont. I had four students from Alaska that were in high school that came to work at IBM, which was about 10 minutes away from UVM. And they had the weekend off, and I said, well, what do you want to do? I'm kind of your chaperone. You guys are from Alaska. You're in Vermont. What do you want to do? They're like, take us to Boston. So we hop into my car, my Ford Taurus. We drive down to Boston, and I remember one of the kids walks into Barnes & Noble across the street, kid you not, from Fenway Park, and he wants to go buy his mom a postcard. Well, I go walking in. I immediately go to the book section, and I go to the baseball books, and I see this book, Heads Up Baseball. And I open it up, and the beautiful part about Heads Up Baseball is there's little boxes in there that you can read, and you can get through the whole book in like maybe 20 minutes and get the gist of it. And I'm sitting there reading this going, oh, my God. I've got goosebumps over my body to this day. This is July 4th, 2000. I get goosebumps on me right now, 17 years later, because of the decision that I made to buy that book. I bought that book. I read it that night at the hotel in Boston. I couldn't get enough. I get back to Vermont. The first thing I do is I go to the computer lab because Sheets, I don't even have a computer yet, bro.
Yep.
It's 2000.
Oh, yeah.
And I email Ken Revisa. He handwrites me a letter back that I get 3 weeks later that says, hey, we offer a grad program in sports psychology. And if you want to be a baseball coach, this would be a great place for you to come because I work with Fullerton and Long Beach and UCLA and the Angels, and I can get you some experience in sports psychology, but you have to come out here for a visit. So now fast forward to from July to November, I go out to Cal State Fullerton to take an official visit, right? I apply, I get accepted. I go out there to meet Ken and the grad students. And luckily for me, the grad student who I was supposed to stay with, how many people know this? The grad student who I was supposed to stay with got food poisoning. So I end up staying at Ken Revisa's house.
Oh, my goodness
gracious. I walk into his office, a.k.a. the bunker, and I walk into the bunker, and it's wall-to-wall mental game books and Skip Burton videos. And you go in there, and he's got it on his fax machine. In comes like a feedback sheet from Jim Abbott, who just threw a no-hitter, I believe, with the Yankees. I'm going like, that's Jim Abbott. He goes, oh, yeah, Jimmy and I have worked together for like 10 years, and he was with the Angels, blah, blah, blah. And he shows me, like, he opens up this binder of these goal-setting sheets and post-pitching performances of guys. Sheets, I didn't sleep. It was like 10 o'clock at night. He goes to bed. He comes down the next morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still sitting there watching videos, taking notes. I couldn't sleep. And he's like, have you gone to bed? I said, no. He goes, well, you need to come to school here then because we need guys that work like that.
Sure. Oh, man.
And I said, you know, so next thing you know, I graduate from Vermont in May, and then I'm going to the Cape Cod League to be a in-uniform coach, a volunteer coach with the Kootenai Kettleers, and the head coach at the time is a guy named Mike Coots. He's now the head softball coach at the University of Maine, and I'm working with Mike Coots and the Kootenai Kettleers, and I'm basically the mental game coach, not knowing anything about what to do, but just literally taking guys through a chapter a week of Heads Up Baseball, having them fill out feedback sheets. I'm faxing them to Ken Revisa. He's looking at them, sending them back to me, giving me feedback, and I'm working with these guys for like 8 weeks in the Cape Cod League. I then go out to Cal State Fullerton, and my routine, it was beautiful. I'm living about an hour from campus. I'm waking up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, driving to school, getting there at 6, working out 6 to 7. I'm teaching 7 to 9. I'm going to be his TA from like 9 to 11. I got an hour in the office from 11 to 12. I'm going Fullerton baseball 12 till like 5 or 6. And then I'm in class from 6 to 9. I drive home, rinse, repeat, do it again. Best 2 years of my life.
Oh my gosh.
It was incredible. And, you know, I got to sit, and of my 30 credits in grad school, about 27 of them, I think, were with Ken Revisa, or 24 of them were with Ken Revisa. So I got the best of both worlds, Sheets, and then I got to hear him in the classroom every day for 3 hours plus. And then I got to check his email and be his TA and bring him lunch every day. I got to bring him to the airport. And then I got to go out to Cal State Fullerton baseball every single day for 2 years with Rick Vanderhook, Dave Serrano, George Horton, Sergio Brown, Chad Baum, and be a fly on the wall and just be there around the program to learn from those guys about baseball. So I was in like the absolute best, call it a petri dish that you could be in of the mental sure. game and baseball, and got to take all of that and put it together. And now, really my life, you could say, is I'm teaching what I learned in 2 years of Titan baseball and Ken Revisa about process and systems and how to be in the present moment and go one pitch at a time and be where your feet are and give yourself the best chance for success. And I'm doing that right now with an oil and gas company in Dallas. I'm doing it with a top Division I college football team. I've done it with 5 UFC world champions. And it's all because of the decision on July 4th, 2000, to buy a book called Heads Up Baseball and email the author.
I've got chills. That's an unbelievable story, Kaner, for our guys to hear of truly the backstory that got you to this point. And I'm going to lean in a little bit harder on this. What were some of those moments? Maybe what were some of those moments or lessons that you still to this day remember so clearly that were maybe aha moments or just signature moments in your development of, oh man, that's something I'd never thought about. Do you have any of those off the top of your head that stick out?
Oh, I mean, how much time do we have?
Exactly.
I have 1,000 of them, you know? And I mean, the biggest ones being control what you can control and let go as quickly as you can of everything that you cannot control. Of you have to be in control of yourself before you can control your performance in any aspect of life. And how do you get control of yourself? Through your breathing. The breath and oxygen is the gateway to self-control. And you have to, you know, and other things would be having a routine. You have to be able to describe what you do as a process if you want to be consistent. That consistency wins, and that consistency is more about your day-to-day routine than it is about your physical skill. Those are just some of them. You know, I think the other ones would be like you focus on being a great teammate over being a great player, because you can control being a great teammate, and being a great player, you know, is something that some people are skilled with, other people aren't. But if you're a great player and you're not a great teammate, we're going to be able to find a replacement for you of someone who is a great teammate and a great player.
Give me one great moment that you remember sitting down with Ken and there was just a lesson that he taught you, a dime he dropped on you that you just went, oh man, that's, you know, we always have a saying on this show called Audio Gold. Give me a revisit moment where you just went, oh man, I'm going to store that one away.
You've got no control of what goes on around you, but total control of how you choose to respond to it.
Yep.
So whether it was how I was being treated as the new guy at Cal State Fullerton, whether it was me literally not being able to throw batting practice and having the yips because I could. That's a big reason why I got into the mental game was I had the yips throwing BP. I'm out there at Cal State Fullerton in the fall and I can't throw batting practice as a 22-year-old volunteer assistant. You're not going to have a job. You're not going to be able to coach college baseball if you're 22 and you can't throw batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm out there going, oh my God, my coaching career is over before it even started. I'm driving myself nuts. Here we go again. And Ken would say, Brian, this is my Revis impersonation. Brian, you got very little control of what goes on around you, but total control of how you choose to respond to it. Make sure you process it properly and make sure you choose your response. Because choosing a response to freak out and the panic's probably not going to help you learn to throw strikes.
Like, it's actually really good.
And so I appreciate it, man. I think impersonation is the greatest form of flattery. You know,
sure, absolutely.
I asked Ken Revisit to be my best man at my wedding, and you know, he's had more impact on my life than anybody. So, you know, I think some of the other things that he just dropped on me were, you know, make adversity your advantage. And when all things are going bad, as it was for Cal State Fullerton, let's say in 2004, when they were like 15 and 16 and just got back from Texas and gotten swept, and he walks into a staff meeting and says, hey, good, 15 and 16, good. What are we doing well? What are we doing well, George, to Coach Horton? Coach Horton's like, what? He goes, well, what are we doing well? He goes, well, we're playing good defense. Good. Let's build off of that. We're playing good defense. Let's build off of that. And just the power of perspective, you know, and I think that's the thing that you get when you get around Ken Revisa. And I hope that, you know, I'm able to transcend into other people as well, is the power of perspective and choosing your perspective in every single situation that you're in all the time.
It's powerful. Thank you for diving into that, man. I really do appreciate that. So take time to reflect. I know that's maybe tough for you to do, Brian, because you're constantly on the move. But what are those personal takeaways that you see, like you said, yourself at getting into Masters there at Cal State Fullerton, that person to the person you are right now? What are the personal takeaways that you see from your growth in this realm? How much has your perspective truly changed?
Oh, I mean, it's immeasurable how much it's changed. You know, and a lot of it starts with just the value of the process and letting go of the outcome. Because when you let go of the need to have something, you dramatically increase your chances of getting it.
Can you say that one more time? Say that one more time.
Yeah. You know, it's keeping the process over the outcome in letting go of the outcome because you can't control it. And when you let go of the outcome, you dramatically increase your chances of getting it. Because what you do is you let go of focusing on top of the mountain, national championship, and you focus on where's my feet, what's the next step. And if you keep moving inch by inch, you'll end up getting where you want to go. It's called the compound effect, right? The compound effect was a book given to me by Mike Bianco, head baseball coach at Ole Miss. The compound effect, now the favorite book of Jim Schlossnagel, the head baseball coach of TCU, who's ranked number one in the country right now. Mm-hmm. And the compound effect sheets is simply, what would you rather have? And let's ask the listeners of this. What would you rather have? Would you rather have a check for $3 million, which we can give you right now, or a penny that doubles every day for a month? And right. most people listening to this probably going, damn, I'm taking the $3 million and I'm buying a new house and I'm going to retire, blah, 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 blah. And the people who take the penny that doubles every day for a month, that penny becomes worth $10 million at the end of the month. One penny doubled every day for a 31-day month is $10 million. So you want to talk about the power of the compound effect? You want to talk about the power of the present moment? I mean, Sheets, I hardly passed English class, and I've written over 40 books, and it's simply because I have a routine where every day I put pen to paper. I'm not a great writer. I don't have a lot of great ideas. I just am relentless in putting pen to paper every day. And I think when you look at the best coaches, or the people who maybe I would say are the best coaches, or definitely well-respected coaches, Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt, Jim Schlossnagel at TCU, you know, what is it that these guys do that separates them from other people? I mean, the work ethic is relentless. They're just sure. Never stop. It's day to day, moment to moment. Jim Schlossnagel bought the house that is directly across the entrance to the parking lot at TCU's baseball stadium and literally tore the thing down and built it back up because he just wanted to be able to walk back and forth from work so he could, one, spend more time with his kids and wife at home, but also get to the field quicker and not lose all that time in transition. I mean, he was living less than 2 miles from the field beforehand. He wanted to live less than 200 feet.
That's it.
I mean, that's the compound effect. That's all that time put back in together. I think that's the biggest thing I learned from, you know, one of the other takeaways I got from Ken was just the value of the moment. The value of time in getting organized with that time. That's probably something I picked up from Coach Horton. There is Coach Horton, one of the most detailed and time efficient and oriented guys I've ever been around in college athletics.
And this is going to be a really broad stroke, and I'm going to preface it with that because it truly is. But if you could, let's start to, this will really set us up for where we're going with the rest of this talk. But let's start to unpack mental game with audio quotations for our coaches and our listeners, because there's key elements that, and you've mentioned a number of them, coaches. I hope you're putting pen to paper as well and taking notes on this, because there's been some great stuff that's already been dropped. But let's talk about the key elements that coaches need to focus on that can truly help their players just from the mental standpoint. So we were reflecting before we got rolling here about some of the systems that you, and you've referenced a few of them, that really help these players deal with failure, deal with adversity, how to move past perceived failures, those type of things. Let's start to unpack the mental game a little bit for our coaches. Let's see where we can't go with this. So go right ahead and get us rolling on that.
Yeah, Sheets, and it all starts off with, if you want to be consistent, you have to be able to describe what you do as a process. And as a consultant or as a coach, I've got to be able to give the team that I'm working with, or the coach that's bringing me in, or the listeners to this podcast, I've got to be able to leave them with a system that has a start and has an end so that they can go be consistent, right? And I don't want to just sit here and talk about the mental game and it's up in the clouds and it's this kind of idea that sure. When it's up in the clouds, it's there, it's the mental game. I'm taking it from the clouds. We're planting it in the dirt right now so that it can grow. It's got to go from the clouds to the dirt, right? And if we're at the ABCA, you heard a lot of coaches talking about culture and what culture is. And well, when you say have a culture, no kidding. That's up in the clouds. Give me the seeds in terms of how I plant that and make it grow.
Sure.
Right? So let's talk about the how-to here. In the how-to in the system of when I got started way back when was a simple George Horton, Cal State Fullerton system. It's what he spoke about at the ABCA in 2005 after they won it in 2004. He said the three P's of championship baseball. And my system and the foundation of one pitch at a time extends just from that, which is live in the present moment, focus on the process, and stay positive. Simply put, present moment focus. Don't count the days, make the days count. Compete one pitch at a time. One pitch can change a game, or one pitch can change an inning, can change a game, can change a season. The process, control what you can control and be able to describe what you do in detail. Your routine is a process for how you get present to play one pitch at a time. And then be positive. Positive is focused on what you want over what you're trying to avoid. For example, in baseball, I'm a pitcher, I'm throwing fastball in. When I was at Vermont, I'm saying, okay, don't hit this guy. Right? What I usually do, I hit the guy. Now I would realize if I'm throwing a fastball in, be positive, tell myself what I want to do, pound the catcher's glove underneath that guy's elbow. So when you talk about being positive, Sheets, it's giving yourself the suggestion of what you want to do, not what you're trying to avoid. And really, for if this is someone's first time listening to the mental game, start there. Present, process, positive. And I think, you know, as time went on, I said, okay, well, there's got to be a little bit more to it, right? And part of the release of flushing it, that was to help you to stay positive and to get present. But I thought there's got to be a little bit more to it. Let me break it out a little bit more so that I can chunk it and make it easier for people to teach, right? So I said, okay, let's call it 4-RIP-3, right? And the 4-RIP-3 system was the 4 R's, which are you got to be consistent, so have routines. Inside of your routines was the second R, which is recognize your signal lights, right? That's the performance awareness that when I'm in control, I'm in green. When I'm starting to lose control, I'm in yellow. When I've lost control, I'm in red. Right? Just like driving the car, if you're in green, you just go. If you're playing baseball in green, you just go. It's easy. But when you come to a red light, you got to stop. In baseball, if you play in red lights, you crash and burn. And I'll tell you where I failed in college baseball was in high school. Anybody who goes on to play Division I college baseball, Sheets, and for the coaches that are college listening to this, you got to get this, is that you're going to have high school athletes that were so much better than the people they were competing against that they could compete in red lights and still win because they were better than everybody. But when that player gets to college and the talent level evens out and they start to compete in red lights, they're going to get beat because they're just not going to be able to handle the adversity and get back to green. They're going to get in red and put a fork in them. They're done. It's just like driving a car through a red light.
That's a fact.
Right. So yellow light is I'm losing control. And if you can learn to have the awareness inside of your routine to recognize when you're losing control, if you recognize you're in yellow light or red light, you go to the third R, which is to release. Right. And let me even take this idea of release and flush it, which is up in the clouds. And let's bring it down to the dirt. And let me say there's 3 steps to a release. And the 3 steps to the release, Sheets, are number one, do something physical. Undo your batting gloves. Knock dirt off your spikes. Take off your glove and rub up the ball as a pitcher. Add to that the second step of the release, which is take a big, deep breath to help release the past. And then have a verbal trigger that you say to yourself, something like, so what, next pitch, or win this one, or get big, that triggers you to get into the next moment. And then after you release that yellow light or red light, following the 3 steps, you then refocus, and you refocus on the next pitch. So what are you releasing? The last pitch, if you have yellow light or red light. What are you refocusing on? The next pitch. Well, if you recognize that you got green lights, there's nothing to release, baby. Just refocus on the next pitch. Well, what does it mean to refocus on the next pitch? Deep breath on a focal point, and then compete. Hmm. And you'll see the Evan Longoria E60 where he takes a breath on the foul pole, or you'll see the classic hitter take a breath on their bat and then step into the box. And if you watch Coastal Carolina or you watch TCU or Cal State Fullerton or East Carolina or Houston or any of the teams that are going through this mental game process, you're going to see specifically their guys working that same recognize, release, refocus process within their routine. Well, that's the 4 R's. The I was mental imagery, right? Because everything happens twice. I learned that from Skip Bertman when I had a chance to interview him down at LSU the day that they were dedicating the field to Skip Bertman. I'll have to tell you that one. That was amazing.
Oh, that's great.
And since then, Skip and I have written a book and done a program together called Winning the Big One. And Skip would say, everything happens twice. How are you using mental imagery? I go, well, it's kind of infrequent. He goes, you want your pitchers to image the pitch before they throw it. You want your hitters, when they're taking that breath on their bat, to image what their plan is before they get in the box to cement their plan. And you want your guys doing mental imagery, you know, the night before every single game that they compete. So I started doing more mental imagery because if Skip Bertman says it, we're doing it, right? And then we go into the 3 P's, which goes back to present, process, positive. Well, you know, Sheets, as I started off with the 3 P's, then we got into 4-RIP-3, and then we were doing the Pride program. What I've kind of evolved to now is what I call the 12 pillars of peak performance. Now, all the fundamentals and the basics and the 3 P's are still in the 12 pillars of peak performance. I've just, over the course of 15 years of doing this, 280 days a year on the road, staying in the houses of some of the best coaches in college athletics, not just in baseball now, but in all sports, in all professions, you know, I've been able to see what are the 12 things, the 12 pillars of peak performance that every high-level performer is doing. And then why don't I take those 12 things and why don't I just try to package my program around those 12 pillars of peak performance so that if a coach wants to speed up their learning curve and they go, well, they want to know, hey, what does Jim Schlossnagel do? What does Rob Childress and A&M do? What did Steve Smith do at Baylor? What does Tim Corbin do at Vanderbilt? What does Mike Bianco do down in Ole Miss? What did Skip Bertman do when he was LSU? It's the 12 pillars of peak performance. They didn't call it that because they weren't all doing all 12 of them, but they were all doing a lot of them. And the ones that are better are doing more of the 12 than the people who aren't. So what I'd like to do at some point here, Seats, is share with the listeners what those 12 pillars of peak performance are so that they can ask themselves, well, I'm already doing some of this, and maybe this is something that I need to start.
Well, and it rolls right into the next part, because certainly if we talk in mental game training, these are the things that are being talked about, done, experienced within championship programs. I mean, we're not getting to the top. We're not climbing the mountain unless we're really dedicating understanding, obviously, with the realm of baseball. Whether your number's 90, 95, 99, there's a mental aspect to this that you cannot ignore. And the peak performers, to use your term, to the championship programs, they're doing something different from the mental side of things that's getting them over the hump. So certainly, let's dive into the 12 pillars that you have noticed in championship programs that certainly have these elements of mental game focus.
Well, for sure. And I think a great place to start with an example of the 12 pillars would be with Cliff Godwin at East Carolina.
Sure.
Right, when he took over at East Carolina, he's in his third season now, okay? And you look at the championship culture, you look at the mindset, you look at the process, and let's look at the results. Conference championship in the first year, second year, their pitches from Omaha down at the Texas Tech Regional. I mean, how is he taking that program from where they were to where they are now so fast? Right? How has Cliff Godwin set the standard for probably all of college baseball coaches when they take over a new program to say, hey, you took over a program that was around 500, get to be pitches from Omaha in your second year. I mean, he's raised the bar on everybody. Yep. Okay, and let's talk a little bit about the process of doing that, because Cliff subscribes to the 12 pillars, and ultimately I've learned a lot of these things and seen things in him when he was an assistant at Ole Miss before I even knew what the 12 pillars were, right? So the 12 pillars are things that have been uncovered by being around great coaches. And the first thing is they train an elite mindset. They realize that mindset is growth. It's a growth mindset. It's not fixed. It's ever changing. It's ever going. And for the coaches listening to this, what are you doing on a daily or a weekly basis to help grow the mindset in your players? Are you using a classroom every day like Tim Corbin and Jim Schlossnagel do? Are you doing something pre-practice like Todd Whitting does at Houston with a mental game minute where he has his players talk for a few minutes about a concept of the mental game that he's been, you know, reinforcing as a part of their system since the fall, so they're getting it consistently. So what are you doing to grow a mindset? The second thing is a championship culture. The championship culture sheet is very simple. It consists of an MVP process. MVP stands for, you know, the program mission, you know, the program vision, and you know, the core principles that will help you to get there. So if you look at Cliff Godwin's press conference when he got the job at East Carolina, if you look at Monty Lee's press conference when he got the job at Clemson, Cliff's going to talk about Pirates, Monty's going to talk about Tigers. Well, those become the core principles of those programs. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be able to, in your program, the analogy I use is this. Imagine if you handed an index card to every kid in your program before they were going to play in a national championship or a state championship game. Would everyone in the organization, coach, player, manager, write down, these are the core principles of our program? If they wouldn't, then you don't even have people on the same page, let alone then taking the next step of intentionally living those on a daily basis. And this first started with Gary Gilmore at Coastal Carolina when I went in there in 2009. And I said, Gilly, tell me about your guys. You know, and he talked about this year at the ABCA when they won the national championship, as he said, you know, our guy, we were hardworking and we were relentless and we were tough. And I'm like, well, if I talk to seven guys, am I going to get the same answer? And he kind of looked at me. He's like, I don't know. Let's do it. So I handed out index cards to every player and said, write down the two to three core principles that make up Coastal Carolina baseball. we probably got 50 of them. So we put them up on a board and put them into different categories and came up with Selfless and Relentless. And here, 7 years later, they win the national championship. And he's still talking about the exercise that we did 7 or 8 years before in creating their MVP process. They have two, Selfless and Relentless. TCU has three, Selfless, Energy, and Excellence. My question for the coach listening to this is, what are the principles of your program? And if you don't know, and your players and staff can't write them down on a piece of paper and everyone write the same thing, you don't have a culture, man. You have people who have their own individual beliefs about what your program should be for to be successful instead of them buying into what your mission, vision, and principles for the program are going to be. So as a coach, that's the first place to start, I believe, is with pillar two, championship culture. The third thing that these great coaches do is they're relentless with their time. They realize that the greatest competitive advantage, here's a great question you could put out on Twitter chat. Where does the greatest competitive advantage come from in baseball? Boom. Let's see what people come up with. I'm going to say it's from doing the things that everyone else has to do at a higher level. So a lot of people bring me in as a mental game guy to get a competitive advantage. And I go in and I say, I'm sorry, but your greatest competitive advantage is going to come from quality practice and maximizing your time, because everyone's lifting, everyone's practicing, and everyone has 24 hours in a day. Let's get better at maximizing our time and our practice and training habits, our sleep and nutrition, because everyone else eats and sleeps too. Let's maximize those things first. Then we'll start looking at getting an advantage from doing the mental game, which no one's doing. So I think the best coaches I've been around, they maximize the factors at a high, high level that everyone has to do. And one of them is time. Let's start there. Because if you're not great with your time, over time, you'll get beat by someone who is. The fourth pillar is knowing your numbers. And a simple measurement, I remember going to watch Vanderbilt practice the first time I worked with those guys in 2007, and they're taking batting practice, and Coach Corbin's got measuring every single ball that's hit. Was it a quality contact or not? And at the end of practice, you know, one of his student assistants is posting, what was the quality contact that for that day for each hitter? What was it for the entire year up to that point? And those numbers were making it competitive. And what measurement does, Sheets, is it makes practice more competitive. And when practice is more competitive, guys focus more. When they focus more, they get better. I'll share an example of Joe Spanky McFarlane, who was the head baseball coach at James Madison. And when the season would end in the fall, let's say in November, until they would start up again, you know, in January or February, he would have in his pitching indoor literally tires hanging from the backstop, and pitchers would have to go in there and throw a certain number of pitches each week. Well, guess who started game one? The guy who started game one was the guy who executed the highest number of quality pitches in that time frame from November until they started up in February. That's the guy who started game one. It was earned. Nothing was given. And sometimes that guy would throw an inning, and sometimes that guy would throw a whole game. But Spanky knew that if he was measuring those quality pitches in that offseason when most guys are not focused, he knew that his team would get better. So measurement is motivation. That's pillar four. Pillar number five is sailing the right ships, which is investing in relationships. The best coaches I've been around, no surprise, are the most relational. They build the best relationships with their players, with their alumni, with their staff, and all that's also going to feed into their championship culture. Pillar six, present moment focus. Pillar seven, process over outcome approach. Pillar eight, attitude determines altitude, baby. You're either an energy giver or you're an energy taker, but you got to be an energy giver if you're going to succeed in baseball. Pillar number nine is everything happens twice, mental imagery. Pillar 10 is routines and habits of excellence. Pillar 11 is recognize your signalites. And then pillar 12 is release and refocus. So you can see that the three P's of peak performance, where we started all the way back in 2004, is now pillar 6, 7, and 8. For RIP 3, the imagery in the four R's is now pillar 9, 10, 11, and 12. But I felt we had to put in mindset building, because it doesn't happen by accident. It only happens by intention. We had to put in creating a championship culture, because that's a process, the MVP process. We had to put in something about time, something about increasing competitiveness of practice through measuring in numbers, and then also the importance of relationships, because all of those things are important in building a championship program. If you're a baseball player listening to this, focus on you know, pillar 6 through 12. That's the micro of one pitch at a time. If you're a coach listening to this, you got to pull it back and do all 12 pillars. That's the macro of running a championship program.
That's absolutely perfect. I appreciate you diving into that. And if you're just joining us, clicking into this podcast, we're talking with Brian Kane from Peak Performance, and what we're talking about, and I'm going to stay on this topic, maybe lean in a little bit tougher on this one, is the classroom sessions, which I was reflecting with one of our guys here in the office today about that, about how it's no coincidence that Tim Corbin, Jim Schlossnagel, these guys have adapted their practice plan to encompass classroom sessions, which makes the on-field transfer of that information incredibly simple because you've talked about it, you've spent time in a different environment, you've got their mind right for the activity they're getting ready to jump into on the field. So stay on that with that frame of implementing this, these mental game approaches, these cues, these signals, implementing that into a practice plan. If I'm a coach that's not very versed, and again, we've dove into those 12 pillars and I'm getting more versed in this and I'm feeling more comfortable about attacking mental game with my players, how do I get it into practice? How do I reinforce that into the practice and the game?
Yeah, you know, and I think before we go into kind of reinforcing it in the practice and the game, let's talk about the classroom setting for a second.
Because sure.
if you spend any time in college football, now they're given 4 hours a day, right? They're going to usually spend 90 minutes to 2 hours in the classroom and then go out to the field for 2 hours. Right now they're watching a lot more film, but why do we not watch film in baseball? You know, like we even close to what we do with watching film in football. Every day in football, they're going to, with Chad Morris at SMU, he's going to spend 5 to 15 minutes from 2 to 2:15 building a mindset, talking about culture and motivation in the classroom. Then they're going into film, then they're going to practice. So I think if you get outside of baseball sheets, mm-hmm. you're going to see that there's a lot of great teaching techniques and a lot of great instructional methods that are being used in other sports that just haven't made it into baseball for whatever reason.
Sure.
But I think if you're looking as a coach to try to implement some things from the mental game right out of the chute, I think one of the first places to start, obviously, is in the classroom with showing some of the routines and showing some different videos, which if you simply go to briankane.com/videos, click on the YouTube player under baseball, you're going to see probably 50 different videos that are all free. They're going to document different things, and you can start with showing like the Evan Longoria E60, showing a game between Baylor and Texas, or Houston and Rice, where I was in the booth with Fox Sports, and we're talking about the mental game. Then when you get on the field, where do you start? I think one of the places you start with is around, let's take batting practice, which every team in baseball does. You've got your guy hitting on the main diamond, and generally what you'll have, and go watch your next baseball practice and see what you see with the sheets, is you're going to have 3 or 4 other guys in that group that are standing around the cage waiting to hit, right? So if we go to pillar 3, time is ticking. We don't have time to wait. If you go to a Tim Corbin baseball practice, there's zero waiting around. He practices like Chip Kelly practices football. Guys are moving around at a pace and a rate that is unlike anywhere else in college baseball. That's probably a big reason why he's done something unlike anyone else has done in college baseball, taking Vanderbilt to where they from where they were to where they are, right? So one of the things that they would do is when you come out of the cage and you go to, let's say, the first base side of the cage, you might see a red home plate on the ground. And that red home plate is going to be a trigger for you when you walk up to that to go through your 3-step release. So you come out of the cage, you go to the red plate, you step in, like you're watching the batting practice pitcher now, you see them throw a pitch, you step out, you'll see a hitter put the bat under their arms, undo their batting gloves, take a deep breath looking at the left field foul pole to release, then look at their bat to refocus, get in the box, and by that time, the guy is probably throwing the 4th pitch, he then walks behind home plate. When he's behind home plate, this is something I first saw with the University of Iowa, and Ryan Brownlee back in like 2008. And Brownlee would have the guys stand behind home plate, behind the shell, and they would simply be tracking the ball, and they would say what zone the pitch was going to. So imagine like a telephone keypad, right? 1 through 9. One is low and in, 2 is low middle, 3 is low away, 4 is like knees to hips in, 5 is knees to hips middle, 6 is knees to hips away, 7 is hips above in, 8 is hips above middle, and 9 is hips above away. So he's standing behind home plate. The guy's in his batting stance behind the shell, and he's watching the pitch, and he's calling out the number of where he thinks the ball is going to land as early as he can out of the pitcher's hand. So he's working on tracking there. And then he would go to the third base side of the cage. There's a green home plate. And there, he's going to simply do his refocus, which is take a deep breath on his bat, get into the box. He's watching the pitch. He gets his foot down watching a pitch. Then he grabs the bat with his dominant hand by the barrel and starts walking to the shell around home plate. As soon as he gets to the shell, that guy in front of him is taking his 4th swing. He jumps in the cage and he gets ready to hit. And the timing of this whole thing is actually better than it would be if guys were just standing around the cage with nothing to do when you do it right, because they're more focused. They're not talking to each other. They're either hitting, which is getting evaluated and measured on every swing. It was a quality contact or not. They're working on their release on the right side of the cage. They're working on pitch tracking behind the cage. They're working on their refocus on the third base side of the cage. And then they get in the cage and hit.
What I love is the cues that certainly if you're a baseball guy, you're sitting there going, yeah, I see all these moments. And I was just going to kind of feed into the next part of this recruiting. If I'm a coach and I notice a player that's out there and he's got the routine in between pitches, might those be indicators for us, Kane, of this guy kind of gets it or he's had some type of he's dove into the mental game a little bit. He's got some type of platform we can build upon. Or are there other cues that we as college coaches might look at a recruit or if I'm a high school coach, I want my players to exhibit X, Y, and Z that show that they have mental game prep in their bag?
You know, that's a great question from a recruiting standpoint, which I don't get into a ton, although I will tell you that I've been on college campuses of top 10 ranked teams and have been literally sitting in an office when a coach got a phone call and a kid said, hey, I'm coming to you guys and I can't wait to get into the mental game because I think that's what's going to make me the best player I can be. The coach hangs up the phone and goes, Canner, you're not going to believe this. So I will tell you that teams in college baseball that are doing the mental game are educating recruits that, hey, this is a competitive advantage that you're going to get when you come to a TCU or to a, you know, an East Carolina and you're working with a Brian Kane. You're not going to get that in most places and you're not going to get that in pro baseball. So if you want to master the mental game in our system that they have there, this would be the place for you to come and develop to be the best player you can be physically and mentally. And I think that's a recruiting advantage for sure. In terms of the player using the mental game, you know, there's a lot of high school programs. Pete Savage out at Reno High School is doing a great job with it. Alan McDougall at Colleyville Heritage High School in Texas, who's got Bobby Witt's, you know, kid who's the top ranked sophomore player in the country right now. You know, those guys come out of their high school program and they're so much more prepared for college baseball because they've been speaking a language that when they get to a college baseball program, they've heard before. Now, I will tell you that not every college baseball program is talking process over outcome, right? There's some that are still in the dinosaur times. There's a lot of them out there, unfortunately. And the high school programs that are, you know, using the mental game and using the daily dominator, watching the Monday message together, using a classroom with a digital training program, you know, that are talking about routines and releases in the 12 fillers. When those guys get into college baseball programs and they've had that exposure in high school, it's like they go into the fall as a sophomore instead of a freshman.
Wow.
And I think college coaches notice that when they're watching kids that are playing. You know, they're watching kids that are playing in high school that are stepping out of the box and going to a release and saving an at-bat instead of giving it away. Or they're watching a kid who isn't pitching that day and he's down in the bullpen doing a shadow bullpen, working on his body language, working on his tempo, working on his, you know, visualization so that they know this kid knows how to prepare. He's not a guy that's, when he's not in the game, is going to be unfocused and checked out. But they understand that this guy's a guy who's going to be preparing for when his opportunity comes, because not a lot of guys get an opportunity as a freshman in college, but they have to be able to stay prepared so that when their opportunity comes, they're that much further along. And I think that's been a huge, huge part of TCU's success is that guys, I mean, take Jared Janzik, who didn't pitch much at all as a freshman, Sean Weimer, same thing. And these guys are now like legit dudes, you know, and you take Brian Howard, who one year, he threw, I think, 13 innings all year, and he threw 7 of those innings at 23-inning game against Sam Houston State. So he threw, like, more innings in the regional in one game in extra innings than he did all regular season. Well, how is he able to do that? He's able to do that because he stays engaged in the process and goes through a high-quality training system every single day so that when he gets the ball, it's not a surprise for him. It's a relief because now he finally gets to compete.
It's a loaded question. This has got a lot to it, and I know you're very humble in spirit, but I think this is a really introspective question for you. Is when you saw Coach Gilmore in the Chanticleers dog pile, and you can reflect back to when that first conversation with the words on the board, and you guys are figuring out relentless and selfless, or you know, really helping Coach Schloss come up with the C acronym and what that meant for his program, and really helping establish a culture, a mindset, and attention to this realm of development of mental game prep and training. How's that feel? What's that moment when you see these programs elevate themselves? And Brian, I mean, you have a hand in it. Your touch is on that program. Your touch is on that dog pile. What's that feel like for you? How gratifying is that moment for you personally?
Oof. I mean, it's been really interesting, Sheets, the last couple of years, just working with multiple teams that are in Omaha. You know, when 1 year Ole Miss and TCU are in Omaha, and I worked with both teams at a high level that year. I slept in the head coach's house multiple nights for both of those teams that same year. So when you're in there and you see them beating up on each other in the College World Series, it's a very strange feeling. It's like you want to just go to Europe and not watch the game and hope that nobody gets hurt, you know?
Right.
I mean, literally, you know? Mm-hmm. So with Coastal Carolina and TCU last year, it was very bittersweet. It was very bittersweet because as happy as I was for Gilly and Drew Thomas and Kevin Schnall and for Coastal Carolina, man, I hurt for TCU and for Coach Loss and those guys, you know? And it was like, man, we've been there 3 years in a row. This is the year. Let's get over the hump. You know, we're going to go out there and they started off 2-0, and then Coastal comes back and just outplays them for two games and wins, you know? And I remember sitting with my wife. I was actually in Barcelona with her. And I'm like, we got to get on a cruise. We got to get out of here. Like, and we're in Barcelona we're on our honeymoon. Right. And it's like 4 o'clock in the morning and I'm just literally fighting to try to find good enough Wi-Fi to be able to watch the game. And, you know, you're just, for the TCU Coastal, you're just kind of bittersweet and you're emotionless, you know? Like this past weekend that Cal State Fullerton's at Houston, you're emotionless, you know, because who do you want to win? I mean, I can't answer that question. You know, sure. I don't want either team to win or either team to lose. I want both teams to play their best at the highest level and let the players and the coaches compete it out and see who wins. I have nothing to do with that. I'm not throwing a pitch. I'm not calling a pitch. I'm not doing anything. So that's a really, really awkward situation for me to be in when I have two teams playing. But I will tell you that, you know, once Coastal defeated TCU and then Coastal won the College World Series, the tears came to my eye because I could not have been happier for those guys. Gary Gilmore is a great human being. Drew Thomas, Kevin Schnall, two of the best young coaches in college baseball who are going to be very successful head coaches. And I've been with those guys for a long time. And I was with Kevin when he went to Central Florida and now back to Coastal Carolina. I had to make a decision. I almost moved to Myrtle Beach, but I moved to South Lake, Texas, right? So I made the decision between I'm going to move to 30 minutes to TCU or 30 minutes to Coastal Carolina when I moved from Arizona 2 years ago. And, you know, I just was happy for those guys, man. It was cool to see, but also bittersweet. You know, I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's just kind of how I would describe it.
Totally does. Can totally see you sitting in that spot being torn in a lot of different directions. I think too, is it interesting from your perspective, especially knowing the training that you put in with those teams and those players, is it apparent, just like, and I'm reflecting on, I think it was Ken had spoke a number of years ago at ABCA and he had a video of Kurt Suzuki and he's taking the breath and he's taking the full breath and he's in control of the at bat. He's, you know, sees the pitch, smokes a single, whatever it is. And then there's another clip of him not finishing the breath, rushing his routine, jumping back in the box, and I want to say he grounds out to the third baseman, some version of that. Do you see yourself watching the game and seeing the stuff that you've implemented and obviously noticing patterns, routines, but noticing when guys are in or out of the routine?
That's all I do. You know, I mean, that's all I do when I go to games. I was just down at the University of Miami this past weekend with Dartmouth. And Dartmouth takes 2 out of 3 from Miami, shuts them out on Friday, shuts them out on Sunday, and on Saturday, there was 2 balk calls in the bottom of the 9th inning that pushed the winning run across for Miami, who won 2-1. Dartmouth outplayed Miami in every aspect of the game this weekend. Dartmouth doesn't have scholarships, and Miami's been in the College World Series the last 2 years. Sure. That is not talent, my friend. That is a group of young men who, again, to get into the Ivy League, that are very, very intelligent, that are very, very committed. It's a head coach in Bob Whalen who has given them the freedom to use the mental game and within the structure of their program that's always made them successful. And they go out and they beat the University of Miami because they played better, right? And we know the best team never wins. It's a team who plays the best. And that weekend, Dartmouth played the best. But to see those guys from Dartmouth have something to go to, I mean, again, you're talking about a high, high functioning, high level kid, right? Who's going to understand that when I'm teaching the mental game, they get it. They pick it up as fast as anyone in the country because they understand the emotions that are in the game. They understand, you know, how this whole thing works together, and they're able to take and implement it here. And when they're playing Miami, I'm sitting there watching Miami. You know, no disrespect, but just seeing like these guys don't have anything to go to. Mm-hmm. Like they're walking back to the dugout and complaining about the umpire zone in the first inning. You know, and the Dartmouth guys are just out there trying to win pitches, you know, and they're just out there taking their breath and they're executing and they're doing their thing and they're getting, you know, there's calls that go against them and they're just saying, hey, good, let's win the next one. I mean, it was fascinating seats to see that. So when I'm watching the game, I'm watching to see if guys are finishing their breath, if they're rushing their breath. I'm watching to see, do they recognize signal lights? Because we can tell when they get into a yellow light or red light by their body language easily enough. Do they recognize it themselves and do they go to a release to be able to get back and control themselves and not give away the next pitch? Because, again, in that setting, that Dartmouth-Miami setting, one pitch can change the entire game, change the entire weekend. And it did.
If there's if there's a coach listening, I'd like to think they're really encompassing this whole conversation and wanting to dive in with both feet. But if there isn't, if there is a coach that's out there that is still a little reluctant, isn't as confident maybe to jump into this mental game and bring this to his team, what advice would you offer those coaches that are probably sitting over the fence, just need to be tipped over?
Go to my website, look at the phone number on the website and call me.
There you go.
That's what I would say to them. I would also say, you know, go to briankane.com/podcast and listen to the podcast, just like you do with calls from the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. You know, but you're talking a lot about baseball and different aspects of baseball. I would say to the coach listening to this is going, meh. You know, here's the deal, Sheep. There's four stages of acceptance, okay? There's four stages of buy-in. The first stage is coaches go, this ain't for me. Mm-hmm. Second stage is they go, this is okay for others. Third stage is they say, I'll try it. Where do I start? The fourth stage is they go, I can't believe I did it any other way. Any coach who's listening to this that's still in stage one that says, this is not for me, please go turn in your clipboard and retire because you're stealing an experience from kids. If you're listening to this and you're not hearing Jim Schlossnagel, Tim Corbin, Cliff Godwin, you're hearing some of these best coaches in college baseball, Augie Garrido, Skip Bertman, Ray Tanner, all these guys that use the mental game, you got to at least get to step two, man, and go, this is okay for others. Joe Maddon, Ken Revis on the dugout with the Chicago Cubs in 2016, winning a World Series. You got to at least be at step two that says this is okay for others. And if you're at step two, man, come on, baby. Come on to step three, which is I'll try it. And how do you try it? Just go to briankane.com/videos and watch some of the baseball videos on there. You know, and then if you want more information or you need help, call the office on the website, take the number off of briankane.com, call, and I got a team of guys that will help hold your hand to get you where you need to be, because I understand for a lot of coaches, especially the younger, you know, high school coaches, they coach the way they were coached. And the mental game is big now, but it wasn't 5 years ago. So anybody who's a young coach is probably not doing the mental game, or an older coach definitely not doing the mental game, because they never were coached on it and they don't know where to start. Well, start at briankane.com/videos. Start with this podcast. Start with listening to my podcast at briankane.com with top college and high school baseball coaches. And then call the office. Come to one of our trainings that we do. Come spend a weekend at my house with me during a total immersion coaches clinic, where we literally get together with five coaches from around the country. They come into my house. They sleep in my house. And we literally watch college baseball games for like 3 days. We have coaches Skype in. We go to a local field and work on some of the stuff from a mental game standpoint. And we go through the entire 12 pillars of peak performance with how to implement it. So, Sheets, I don't know if that was clear, man, but that's the path that they want to go on. Appreciate the coaches listening to this and appreciate what they're doing for kids. I just think that at this point in 2017, if you're not using the mental game at some level, it doesn't have to be as deep as the programs we've been talking about, but if you're not addressing the mental game at some level and you're still thinking that, hey, our mental game comes from working hard, dude, go do something else, because you're stealing kids' experiences. And I want to give them a specific gift that they can listen to in what I call Automobile University.
The best
coaches I've been around, man, when they're in their car, they're not listening to Mike and Mike in the morning. They're not listening to MLB Network. They're listening to audio books that they can take and they can use for their personal growth. Because we know if you want more, Sheets, you got to become more. Well, I want to help the coaches that have been listening to the calls from the clubhouse in this episode become more. And the way I want to do it is I want to give them a free audio book version of a book that Matt Morse and I wrote called Mental Conditioning for Baseball. All they have to do is go to briankane.com/baseball and, you know, give us their email address, and we're going to send them immediately Mental Conditioning for Baseball, the audio book, for free. That all they then have to do is listen to it when they're driving in their car. And over the course of time, they're going to learn to master the mental game, because in Mental Conditioning for Baseball, we talk about the 12 pillars in 4-RIP3, specifically in a baseball context. So if the listeners to this podcast, if they want more, that's going to be the place for them to start immediately, because we all have windshield time when we're all driving. Let's maximize that time by getting Mental Conditioning for Baseball, the audiobook, for free and listening to it while they drive around.
You know, and there was a pillar that you mentioned about being either an energy faucet or drain, some version of that. I mean, you are an energy fountain, and it is awesome to be around. It's awesome to get on this call with you. And I truly, Brian, from every aspect, man, I appreciate you taking time to sit down and join us on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, talking about the mental game, talking about how to make your programs better, your players better. And Kaner, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being on the call with us, my man.
Cheats, my pleasure. And I will let you know that I sat down for probably about 5 seconds to this call, and then I had to get up and move around, man. I was jacked up. Appreciate you having me.
Love it. All right, man. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. You too.
If your body could talk, what would it tell you? Know your body, transform your life. That's the motto of DexaFit, the best in helping you know your numbers. DexaFit shows you exactly how your body composition, cardiovascular fitness, and metabolic health compares to the optimal standard. We know that measurement equals motivation, and DexaFit measures your progress while providing the diet and fitness plan customized for your body. DexaFit is providing a tremendous opportunity for listeners of the Peak Performance Podcast to get their first scan at a discounted rate. Go to briankane.com/DexaFit. That's briankane.com/DexaFit right now to learn more. Are you looking for a high-energy, competitive way to get your team to compete while training athleticism, hand-eye coordination, and lateral quickness? If so, you got to check out Spikeball. Top high school, college, and professional athletes around the world are using Spikeball as a fun and safe competition to start their training sessions, practices, and workouts. It's also a tremendous way to train your routines and releases and build that elite mindset. As a listener to the Peak Performance Podcast, you can get a free spike ball set by visiting briankane.com/spikeball. Again, that's briankane.com/spikeball, because if you're not playing spike ball, you're just playing games. You've probably heard me say, do a little a lot, not a lot a little. A great way to do that is by following me on Twitter, liking my Facebook page, or adding Brian Kane Peak on Snapchat, where I'm posting daily mental game reminders for you. Thanks for listening to the Peak Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes and leave a positive review or share a link to this episode on social media using hashtag PeakPod. Mention Brian Kane and one thing you learned in this episode for your chance to win a free ticket to the next Brian Kane Experience live event. Dominate the day.